Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, your host for the Local Issues Forum here in Baltimore. My guest today is Delegate Corey McCray, member of the House of Delegates for the 45th District of Baltimore City. Born and raised in Baltimore City, Corey McCray is an organizer for his local union and a small business owner. A business person since he was 21, Corey is a graduate of Baltimore City Public Schools, a five-year apprenticeship program with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 24, and Baltimore City Community College. Acknowledging his blessings, he gives back to his community by working with Baltimore's youth and serving as a role model. He knows that young people do best when they take pride in themselves and their community. That's why he gives his time to organizations such as the Overlea Community Association, the AFL-CIO, and Bel Air Edison Neighborhood Incorporated. Corey is a co-founder of BEST Democratic Club and is an active member of the Democratic Party organizations in both Baltimore City and statewide. Corey and his wife, Demetria, are raising two young daughters, Kennedy and Reagan McCray, and one son, Corey McCray Jr., in the Overlea community. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Delegate McCray.
Dave, thanks for the opportunity.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a short bio in your own words.
Born and raised in Baltimore City. I'm an electrician by trade out of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, small business owner. I'm also living in the Overlea community. I live there with my wife. I live there with my three kids, CJ, Kennedy, and Reagan. And, you know, just a delegate trying to make a difference in the city of Baltimore.
Let's go back a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Let's go back to your youth and mm-hmm. how did this mm-hmm. come about? I mean, what were you like as a kid?
You know, I think that I faced some of the same challenges that many youth, young men, young women in the city of Baltimore face. But luckily, I had the opportunity to find an apprenticeship program. I always thank my mom because she was the person that called the Department of Labor License and Regulation and asked them for a list of the apprenticeship programs that they had in the state of Maryland. And just being accepted in to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW, gave me opportunities that I didn't always have growing up in the city of Baltimore. Gave me the ability to learn a trade, take the trade that I learned and turn it into entrepreneurship. And one of the things that you realize in life is when you are successful, it's not about you having success, but it's how many people you can bring along with you to be successful.
That's very good. So did you have a leaning toward being an electrician or how did that come
about? Not at all. I think that many times in Baltimore City and just not Baltimore City, across the state of Maryland, many young men, young women are not sure about what they're going to do to advance their career or what type of profession they would like to go into. So no, not at the time. I didn't know anything about electricity. I didn't know what black, white, green was. I didn't know what lighting fixtures and receptacles were, but I knew that I worked hard. I knew that I listened and I knew that I would give it a fair shot. And I just grow to really enjoy the trade and it has advanced my career in so many different ways that it's unbelievable.
So what happened after you finished that apprenticeship?
After I finished that apprenticeship, I went on to become a union rep for my Local 24, IBEW Local 24. I then went on to work for my international for 3 years. I spent 3 years on the road traveling the states, Ohio, D.C., Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Kentucky, and just organizing workers.
Really?
Organizing workers for a better wage, to have affordable health care, to have a dependable retirement, and just making sure that their workplace was mutually benefit for the employer and employee.
So now, how did you get into politics? I mean, it seems like a natural progression being that that you were the union.
Yep. So one of the things that I think about is here is a young man that has a trade, entrepreneur, has some investment. I have a beautiful family and I have the things that the American dream tell you you can have. And I realized that that was not true success, Steve. I realized that it was a lot of challenges within 2 minutes of where I lived at. It was a lot of challenges and a lot of people that went through the same situations that I went through that needed a shot. They needed a fair shot. And when I tried my best to get folks elected that were young, had good intentions and well-mannered, and one of the things was that they were not successful. They weren't able to cut through. So instead of yelling about it, instead of jumping up and down about it, try your best to form a blueprint to be able to advance the people that you know are very good, have great qualities, and just good people, going to make good decisions for people within the city of Baltimore.
Well, we'll talk more about in a little bit about your politics and what you stand for and mm-hmm. all, but tell us a little bit about your family. How did you meet your wife?
I met my wife when I was 17 years of age. She is a very, very good person. She's a teacher. She's just a great spirit, and she compliments and myself very well, and I think that we both support each other.
What's she teach?
Second and third grade.
Wonderful. And you have three kids?
Three, yes.
You've been married how long now?
4 years. Don't be challenging me like that, dude.
Sorry. See, I can edit this, so don't worry about that. How did you think about starting to be a delegate? And I mean, you were talking about?
You know,
it just kind of came to you? Or
no, what? You kind of follow politics. I was following things such as the folks in 2010 trying to get a livable wage for retail stores. And mm-hmm. I saw that it was a challenge. I saw that some of the people that voted against a living wage coming to the city of Baltimore for box stores that made over a certain amount of income, that they voted against it. And at that time, I thought that they voted against the interests of the people that were in their district. I saw things like the minimum wage that was pretty watered down, and you see so many people facing different challenges, and you say, this isn't right. This isn't right what's going on, and we need to make sure that we have leaders that know how to leverage the opportunities, have a voice for the voiceless within our community.
A lot of the things that I do, I base it on creating a business plan or mm-hmm. a blueprint to do, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. then you started out with getting organized people together, getting ideas together, and then you can implement it mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. away, mm-hmm. visit in 3 months, see what works, throw out what doesn't.
Yep.
And it's a living thing, and it continues and continues, which is the basis, really, one of the basis of why I'm starting here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a couple different initiatives going, but it's not me doing it. It's mm-hmm. the people involved, and I'm the one that'll be able to mm-hmm. keep it going. Mm-hmm. And make sure if it wanes mm-hmm. that it comes back in. Tell me about what some of your initiatives that you're taking up here.
I'm going to talk about the last 4 months. One of the things started in January. So one of the things that we did just this last week, while I was in legislative session, there was a lot of businesses talking about the great work that's going on and around in the state of Maryland. And I said, how can we leverage this for the 45th district? So what I did was I pulled all those businesses such as PNC, such as BGE, such as AT&T, such as Susquehanna, the Harbor Bank of Maryland, so on and so on. And then I went and pulled in all of my nonprofits. So the nonprofits that's with the main streets, that's doing all the boots on the ground work, such as Bel Air Edison Neighborhoods, Station North, such as Hamilton Lauraville, Midtown. So many nonprofits that are doing the groundworks, doing great work, but don't always have the resources to get the work to the community. So you pull in those philanthropic opportunities, you pull in those people that's doing the work on the ground, and you say, what are you guys funding? What type of grants are you funding? When are you funding them? What is some of the challenge that people find when they're trying to apply for grants? Can you give me examples of what you have funded? Put them in a room. I think that worked very, very well. That was just this past Wednesday, mm-hmm. just, 3 days ago. And I thought that was a great opportunity. One of the things that I always try to do is, from a business standpoint, leverage the relationships that you have to benefit your district. One of the things just yesterday, we were able to drop off several boxes of toys to Madison Square Recreation Center, one of the challenging communities in Oliver and Newborough East, and just say, hey, we do care about our children. We want to make sure that our children have the resources, have the books, have the things that's necessary to be able to compete not only on a state level but also on a global level. When the unrest was going on in the city of Baltimore, one of the things that we always forget is that some of our kids missed school that Monday when school was closed. So they went without eating. We have the highest population of homeless children in the city of Baltimore, and the only meal that sometimes our kids get is the breakfast and lunch that they get at school. So we made sure that we leveraged the relationship to have all of our friends come in and bring food in for the neighbors within mm-hmm. our district. We did that in the McAldrey Park community. Then we had so many donations come in that we actually took some up to Landvale Towers in the Oliver community. So, this is just stuff that happened in the last 3 weeks, but every chance I get, I'm trying my best to leverage the opportunities for my district.
Right. We tell the listeners that we're recording this on May the 30th, mm-hmm. 2015, and so what we're talking about, like you say, is just happening now. So mm-hmm. You're trying to implement a plan in your district and hopefully it'll work and maybe be a model for the rest of the city.
Well, Dave, one of the things that you say is that small victories do count. Sometimes they're overlooked, but those small victories affected somebody, whether it's a person, whether it's 10 people, whether it's 100 people. And one of the things I always tell my friends and I tell my colleagues is that I get very good sleep at night because I worry about the things that I'm in control of. So the things that are not within my control, I try my best not to focus and not look at those as distractions, but always push for the things that you can do within your district to lift it up.
And you can't change the things that you have no control over.
I agree.
You can't worry about that, too. But you have only been around since January, and of course, what's that, 4 months or something like
yes,
that?
Sir.
But it seems like you're implementing something, and you're starting to get a foundation that. Tell me about some of the bills that you've attempted to put in here.
So one of the things was that I put in three bills this legislative session. The first bill was in reference to apprenticeship programs. The apprenticeship program that I went through with the IBEW was free of cost, and I said, from a business standpoint, how can we leverage this to affect more young men, more young women in a community such as Berea, Oliver, and just across the state. And I looked at the state prevailing wage projects. I looked at state prevailing wage protects wages. It protects making sure that an employee has health care, making sure that an employee has retirement, because one of the things is the state doesn't want to do. They don't want to be double taxed. So it's tax money that's actually funding these projects, but you don't want somebody to be making such a low wage that they're on some type of government subsidy also. So we try to correct that to make sure that the employer or the contractors that do hire the employees for this job make a good wage, have health care, have a good retirement. But one of the things that we look at is the apprenticeship opportunities. How do we leverage them for the city of Baltimore and for the state of Maryland? And one of the things that you think about is that the apprenticeship cost is not covered on state prevailing wage projects. So that's the conversation that I tried to amplify. One of the studies showed that just in the city of Baltimore, those people that went through the 4 or 5 year apprenticeship program and graduated when they were supposed to, compared to the people that didn't graduate but stayed within the industry, there was about a $25,000 wage gap a year that was being left on the table. So these people were third year apprentices for 3 or 4 years when it was only supposed to be 1 year. And that was something that I was trying my best to correct, because I know that one of the challenges is funding for school. And having the contractor have some form of responsibility, especially when it's taxpayer dollars, is very, very critical and can enhance those opportunities for those young men and young women. That bill was not successful. It went through economic matters. I fell shy of 3 votes, but I do look forward to bringing back an apprenticeship package this next legislative session. The second bill that I put in was in reference to voting rights for ex-offenders, voting rights for our family, friends, and neighbors that return into our community looking to be productive. They face challenges with unemployment, with transportation, with housing, and just so many different areas. Just access to fresh food, having supermarkets in the neighborhood. One of the things is that they cannot vote until they're off of parole or probation. But these folks are living within our cities, within our counties, in the state. And one of the things that I said was, why don't they have the ability to vote? They pay taxes. They pay taxes immediately after they're released from prison, if they're working, whether they're buying a bag of chips, whether they're shopping at the grocery store. And why do they not have an opportunity, have a decision-making process, and have representation, or decide who their representation is going to be, whether it's on a municipal level, whether it's on a state level, or whether it's on a federal level? And one of the things you think about is just this election cycle, the 2014 election cycle, with so many elections being so close, under 50 votes. I had a friend that was elected in Prince George's County by 6 votes. Six votes, Dave. And I had a friend that was elected in West Baltimore County by less than 50-some votes. I had a friend in Southern Maryland that was elected by 76 votes. So when you talk about electing representation by such a short margin, how can you leave 40,000 people out of the equation is the question that I ask.
Right.
The last bill that I proposed, which was in, didn't have enough time to go through committee, but this bill was a rail safety bill in reference to asking that it be 2 conductors on a train or on heavy machinery when they're operating and coming through the state of Maryland. One of the things that I think about is that we have so many tremendous, terrible accidents that's happening across the country, and we need to ensure that we have safety on these railways. You have to have a co-pilot and a pilot on the airplane. Any type of heavy machinery, you typically see 2 people. We want to make sure that that's safe, and that does happen for the state of Maryland.
Well, it's interesting what is close to your heart and what have you taken already in just these few months. Another way that I found you was an article in, I think it was the Baltimore Business Journal, mm-hmm. about you addressing the Maryland Bankers Association. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
One of the things is that when you see the opportunity to leverage for your neighborhood, because we don't want to have that real conversation sometimes. Sometimes what's happening in our neighborhoods, especially our challenging neighborhoods, are overshadowed. So I represent a district that has poverty levels as high as 50%. That means that one in two families are bringing in an income of less than $25,000. I'm talking about Madison Easton. I'm talking about Berea. I'm talking about Oliver. I'm talking about New Borough East. I'm talking about so many communities in my district. One of the things that I think about is that we don't always have supermarkets to have access to fresh food. So you have a population of children, of adults that have high diabetes because they're shopping at corner stores, bodegas that may have higher prices than a regular supermarket, that may not have the most best access to fresh food, and it's a challenge. One of the things that we also talk about is that we also have housing challenges. So you may have a block of houses that have three or four neighbors on it, but it's a row of 13 houses. So the other eight, the other nine are dilapidated. They face a lot of challenges. And that's what builds on to crime. That's what builds on to so many other systemic challenges. So I always try my best to have those real conversations, no matter who I'm talking to, because they're real issues within a district. And that's what happened when I was in a room with the Maryland Bankers Association, which was a great group because a lot of those banks were at that meeting on Wednesday that I just referenced.
Right. So you made some good connections.
Make sure that they're helping on the ground with those mm-hmm. nonprofits and folks that are in the neighborhoods to make sure that we get access to housing, to make sure that businesses are coming into our neighborhoods and having a great opportunity for that, to make sure that when we talk about stormwater projects or arts projects, that they're funded, and to make sure that the facades that's coming into our neighborhoods look very presentable so that we can have people from other neighborhoods come and want to eat when we do have a restaurant or do have supermarkets and things of that such. So it was a very, very positive conversation. It was a very real conversation, but I also think that it transitioned into what we saw Wednesday.
It sounds like you're making progress, and that's really one of the reasons, a good main reason. I wanted to get to know you, of course, but that I had you on, because I've been to various conferences and about how do you do this, how do you improve neighborhoods and stuff like that. And to me, the one of the basic foundations are community centers, because mm-hmm. community centers can be a place for kids to go just mm-hmm. on a basic level after school. Also, there could be an outlet for the SBA or small businesses. And, I mean, that can be a main place mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. everyone to go to. And like you say, you could to develop neighborhoods and their own businesses, mm-hmm. to engage people, mm-hmm. to give them something to be proud of, too. You know, mm-hmm. and then, you know, the crime will go down. And I think it just has to have a plan like that. It sounds like you're doing that. But mm-hmm. is that the type of thing that you would be interested in doing, or you're kind of engaging in terms of that?
You know what? I think that community centers are very, very important. I try my best to stay in and out of them. I have several of them within my district. I have Hazelwood. I have YSP with Furley. We have Madison. We have the Oliver. It's so many different community centers. There's so many people on the ground that's doing the work. The thing that we have to make sure, Dave, that we have to make sure is that they have the resources to be successful within those neighborhoods.
They're usually the first thing cut
yep.
when things happen. What I find a lot in this is that there's so many one-off things because of funding will mm-hmm. run out or something like that. There's got to be a way to make it a sustainable effort. Yep. And like you say, if you teach people to be able to teach people mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's something that's sustainable.
Yep. And it's got to be, it's going to have to be a public-private partnership. Like you said, the government doesn't always have it, so we always have to be leveraging right. those relationships. So businesses that's doing business within our neighborhoods, that's doing making money within our neighborhood, we have to challenge them to be better. We have to challenge our neighbors to be better, those that have. The reality is that you have strong communities because you have people with a very high income, and then you have people with a low income, but they're all intertwined into one neighborhood, and that's how we get our supermarkets. That's how we get our restaurants, the bookstores, the bakeries, and those and such and such and such.
Right, because you have to make it attractive yep. to businesses too.
Yep.
And like you said too, when it develops, it'll develop into a national and a global
Yep.
Initiative too,
yep.
And making cities work. These bills that you have, mm-hmm. they weren't passed, right?
No.
So you're going to still work on these initiatives.
The Voting Rights Bill was passed by the Senate and the House. The governor just vetoed it. One of the conversations that is amplifying right now is finding out or putting together a coalition to ensure that we have the support to override the veto. So mm-hmm. one bill did actually pass.
And that was just recently that he vetoed it.
Yep. Right? That was just this past week.
Like most of my shows, it's not a one-off. Mm-hmm. I like this. This is an introduction we can, you know, tell the people about. Mm-hmm. And I hope you come back on a mm-hmm. continuous mm-hmm. basis mm-hmm. and update me. And like I said, I can be mm-hmm. the one, the word out mm-hmm. and what's going mm-hmm. on. If you're, mm-hmm. if you're agreeable to that would be terrific.
Yep.
But for now, just tell me what you see yourself, your family, if you want to talk about that too, mm-hmm. and your district in 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years, I hope that my district is a place that people want to live, love, and just earn. And I think that it's a great opportunity to have seniors, our youth, our middle class, and just build on and make sure that we have the opportunities that folks can make a good living wage, that they can have health care, they can have a dependable retirement, they can see housing, transportation, and things of that such that are very, very promising and can then promote and want to be a place where families live.
Because because with your history with the Electrical mm-hmm. Workers Union, mm-hmm. about the working person, about mm-hmm. all this mm-hmm. that's interrelated.
Yep.
Education is important.
Yep.
Building people's confidence is important.
It all is. That.
Is there anything else you'd like to add for now?
I just want to let the listeners know that I am on Facebook. It's just Delegate Corey McRae. That I am on Twitter, at Elect Corey McRae, Instagram, at Corey McRae. And you can always look up the website, www.electcoreymcrae. I try my best to blog. During the session, I was doing it every other week. While I'm on the interim, I'm at least ensured that I'm doing it at least once a month, just to let folks know what I am working on, some of the projects going on in the district, and how we can collaborate. And if you wanted to make sure that you ensure that you get the, what I'm putting out there, you can always sign up for the listserv on the website.
That's great. Sounds very good. On my website, I have the link, of course, to this conversation, but I also will have that link to your website too.
I appreciate it,
too, like that. So nothing else to add? Anything else to add?
Nah, I just want to say thank you. It's opportunities such as this to amplify the voice of the regular people, making sure that they can have the opportunity to get their voices out. And that's the challenge a lot of times, not just in the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, and across the country. So I applaud you. I thank you for letting the east side of Baltimore have a shot.
Well, I mean, I've been around for quite a while. I'm not a young man anymore. Like you. So I've seen some initiatives, and I think that this one is built on a good foundation on what you're doing.
Yep.
And so I'd like to be part of it, and I hope that you know, we continue this conversation and this relationship.
Thanks again, Dave.
Right, thank you. I've been talking to Delegate Corey McRae, the member of House of Delegates for the 45th District of Baltimore City, and you've been listening to Baltimore Internet Radio's Local Issues Forum.